This is Intersection, I'm Matthew Petty. A bronze sculpture of Fred Rogers is on its way to Rollins College. The sculpture, which stands about 7 feet tall and weighs about 3,000 pounds, took 2 years to complete. Sculptor Paul Day says it came about from a chance encounter with a Rollins trustee, Alan Keane, and his wife Linda, who visited his studio while on vacation in France and asked if he would create the sculpture for the college. Day knew nothing about Fred Rogers before he started researching the piece.
And I have to say, it was an epiphany, would be the word. I'd never heard of him, never heard him speak, never seen a picture of him. And all of a sudden, my computer screen was awash with images of Fred and his puppets. And of course, videos of previous episodes of what I came to learn was Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I was bowled over by this man and by his incredible wisdom and generosity of spirit and intelligence and educational prowess.
Day says he's planning to be in Florida when the sculpture is unveiled in October, although the pandemic has made it difficult for him to get a visa to travel. I spoke to him earlier this month as the sculpture was being loaded onto a container and shipped to Florida. He says the project became a personal quest for him after meeting with Fred Rogers' wife Joanne, who passed away earlier this year.
When I came to think about how to represent this man, I think my lack of a prioris, my complete ignorance of him previously, was an advantage. You know, there are two sculptures in the States that I'm aware of that have been commissioned of Fred, one in Pittsburgh, one in La Trobe, shown as just a seated figure in his, you know, classic cardigan and sneakers. I felt that what was missing in those statues was something that told the story of who he was. Bearing in mind I'd never heard of the man, I felt that the sculpture would be something that's going to outlive the memory of him among people who are alive today, quite possibly. And therefore, it should in some way explain itself, show him doing what he did best and why he became so loved and famous. It also occurred to me that Fred, being an extremely modest and humble person, always tried to deflect the attention away from himself towards the children and towards the work he did. He would never have been comfortable in any way with sort of being treated somehow as a VIP or celebrity. And having looked at all the documentary footage of him, it's clear that whenever he was in the company of children, he lost almost all interest in the grown-ups around him and went straight to them and got on their level and communicated with them and communed with them in a way which is exceptional. So I persuaded, or I encouraged the college to consider the idea of not a statue of Mr. Rogers, but a scene showing Mr. Rogers, doing his thing.
So he's surrounded by, like, he's got a kind of a group of children around him. He's sort of holding court with them or speaking to them on their level, as you say.
Yes. He's sort of squatting down, sitting on a little child's stool. There are seven children around him in various attitudes of, various positions and various moods. And he's using Daniel, the puppet, the striped tiger, to tell a story to them and to engage with them. And one of the most moving scenes in that documentary you mentioned earlier, and it's a documentary that everyone has to see, I think, it's so beautiful, was when a little boy was standing in front of Mr. Rogers with Daniel on the end of his arm. And the little boy was describing how recently his pet dog had died. And Fred, through Daniel, was sort of sharing the loss of this pet with the little boy and having the most extraordinary and intimate and touching conversation. And I just felt that picture really summed up the uniqueness and the brilliance of Fred Rogers.
And the documentary, of course, came out in 2018, and that's Won't You Be My Neighbor. This sounds like a complicated sculpture, a complicated scene, Paul. So Is it among the more challenging pieces that you've worked on from a technical standpoint?
I would say probably yes, in that I've done a lot of big work in the past, and I have four fairly large monuments in London, for example, with lots of figures, hundreds of figures. But in this case, the figures are what we would call in the round. They're full sculptures. I tend to work a lot in relief. That means sculpting pictures against a backdrop where you only really have to deal with the front surface. In this case, it's been a while since I've done a group of life-size. Well, in fact, these are more like twice life-size, these figures. So they're really quite big. But it's been a long time since I've actually tackled figures in that complexity of composition. And also, it's really the first time that I've sculpted children on that scale in the round as the primary subject. And I'm sure you're aware, but you know, children in art come with a health warning. So many renderings of children in art turn towards over sentimentality, or towards kitsch, or the children look like shrunken teenagers. But also, I've always found when looking at children that their faces can change so remarkably from looking like a child to looking like an old person. You know, children's expressions are unguarded. They're not necessarily aware of the politics of their relationships. They are frank, open pages, as it were. And therefore, when I see children in art portrayed as a sort of a sweet, sentimental beings, that's a superficial adult portrayal of childhood, in my opinion. And one of the great things about Fred was that when he spoke to a child, he spoke to that child as a human being, not as a child, but as somebody with whom he could have a deep and meaningful conversation, albeit on their level. But it wasn't in any way an approach that talked down to children. And I've always connected with that myself. I feel I've always had a fairly open mind and an open heart towards young children, and I find it very easy to talk to them. So I brought children into the studio, children of friends, children from the local school, just in very, very small numbers, and spent time with them. One mum in particular brought three children in to pose for me. And not that I was looking to copy their likeness, but I wanted to get a feel both for their physicality, their, you know, the length and shape of their limbs and hands and so on, but also obviously what sort of facial expressions and attitudes might be appropriate.
It strikes me too that, I mean, you're evoking a scene from a television show, so you're kind of freezing a moment in time, but you're then trying to turn that around and make it real. So you're trying to do two things at once. There's kind of an alchemy to it, right? You're trying to evoke a sense of movement and motion and mimic an art form that is, by its very nature, you know, it's kind of fleeting. Television is something you kind of experience in the moment. So you're trying to pull off the impossible in some ways.
Well, I think sculpture, in a sense, is always trying to, figurative sculpture is always trying to strive to that. You're absolutely right. If the fixed image doesn't have implied movement, latent life to it, physical life, you know, moving life, then that object frozen in time can look soulless and lifeless. Now, obviously, you know, a sculpture is something that one discovers in physical space, therefore you have to move around it. So there's always a sort of an element of time passing when you look at a sculpture. It is, in a sense, not just a fixed image, but there is also the element of time as you turn around it or it turns around you. So they're not so dissimilar in some respects, but obviously this image will stay the same forever while it's in existence. And composition, i.e. finding a balance of form and line, positioning the figures in such a way that the eye is naturally drawn across it in sort of curves and zigzags helps to, I think, imbibe it with a sense of movement and life. But I was also very, very keen that, for example, to avoid what one could imagine being a 19th century image of children around the feet of Jesus, for example, or cherubs. You know, this is not a religious icon. This is a man who loves these children, and the children love him, but they are interacting. They're having a conversation between equals, in a way. And I felt that the children should be expressing some of the emotion, curiosity, wonder, playfulness that I saw brilliantly portrayed in that documentary and in other archives that I've consulted of Fred. You know, I wanted the children and Fred to be having a personal conversation, and for the children to express not a sort of hagiographic glorifying, this is Mr. Fred Rogers, but, you know, we are communing with, we're talking, and we're listening to his story. We're Daniel is our friend, you know, Fred's our, Mr. Rogers is our friend. I want it to be somehow as truthful as possible to the archives that I witnessed and to the spirit of what I felt was the man's relationship with his audience.
It's interesting you bring up the idea of not wanting it to evoke religious imagery or something, because that's something that his widow, the late Joanne Rogers, brought up as well. She wanted to make it clear that this was not a saint, this was a real human being. And it sounds like that's kind of what you're striving for a little bit there as well.
Well, I think Joanne and I actually spoke about this. I didn't manage to get from her exactly what made Fred anything other than a saint. In my Protestant-minded understanding of sainthood, Fred is most definitely a saint, but as is Joanne, as are those who profess that faith. You know, so the sort of the idea of sainthood doesn't depend. It's not the Catholic idea that somebody has to have performed miracles and so on. But in fact, the fact is, I think our concept of what a miracle is sometimes goes astray, because in a sense, Fred's life and work was pretty miraculous. The number of lives he touched and changed for the better, there is a side to his work, his life's work, which is extraordinary and worthy of praise, you know, and of a form of adoration. But the fact is, as you say, and I agree entirely with Joanne, you know, flesh and blood, we're all failed, you know, we're all failed human beings, as it were. And it's not about, you know, it's not about the achievement. It's about how we commune with others, how we befriend others, how we are good neighbors. I mean, Fred's values of neighborliness, I think, would be beneficial to infuse into the current public dialogue and into the world of social media. And in fact, I think if Fred were alive, he'd be now and performing, you know, and writing his programs and so on, he might well be teaching us all how to be neighborly and good neighbors on social media, for example. You know, what shift in our behavior needs to happen so that we no longer feel we can take liberties in anonymity to criticize and insult people over the internet. I think there is an art to be learnt of neighborliness in our current sort of, you know, modes of communication.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that Fred Rogers' name has been invoked many times over the last 2 years, talking about politics and how to talk about the pandemic. And I think there's a sense of kind of yearning for, if only we had somebody like Fred Rogers to lean on in these times. But people are sort of picking up those lessons and trying to use them, especially in their conversations with kids and about how to kind of navigate some of these challenging issues. You'd planned to be here in the United States, but because of the latest surge in the pandemic, you've been held up in France. But I imagine you'll be here, or you're planning to be here at some point to unveil the sculpture, right?
I will be deeply distressed not to be at the unveiling. And I hope that the powers that be are able to see this memorial as in the national interest. and allow me an exception to go and both work at the college in a sort of teaching capacity as for a short period, but also to be able to communicate and present the sculpture to all those people who have been generous enough to make donations to pay for it, and all the faculty staff and the peripheral staff at Rollins who have worked incredibly hard to turn this event into something major for them. So yeah, I really, really will. I mean, if I had to row the Atlantic, I would row the Atlantic, but I've got to be there.
And that was British sculptor Paul Day, creator of a 7-foot-tall sculpture of Mr. Rogers that is being installed at Rollins College in October. Mr. Rogers was a graduate of Rollins. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from Advent Health, editorial guidance from Latoya Dennis. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.